wonderful things, wonderful comforts, wonderful conveniences, far more than you can possibly imagine or I can tell you about, that you can look forward to through 7,000 tomorrows. And when that tomorrow becomes today for you, as it has for me, you'll learn an even more amazing truth, that for all the marvels of science, you will still be a busy homemaker. The very features that make your work easier will leave you more time, free of yesterday's drudgery and routine, better able to express your own tastes and imagination, and to be a better wife and mother. I know you will enjoy it as much as I do. And please, won't you come and visit me soon? All of you, here, now, you. 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 Here, now.
Down the street from me who always seems to be fiddling with something or other in his garage, a middle-aged tinkerer who spends his time fixing washing machines or bikes or recently rabbit hutches. And as he tinkers and fiddles about in his garage, he always has a radio station playing, and it's always set to absolute 80s by the sounds of it, or one of the other radio stations that are popping up now that only play songs from certain decades or find other ways to play old music like classic rock. Each time I walk past, I get a good earful of the Eurythmics or OMD or Ultravox. The other day it was Is This Love by Alison Moyet. Now, I'm not that old, but as soon as I heard the catchy synth and the bit where Alison Moyet seems to sing in a downward spiral sort of way, instantly transported me back to another age, which I vaguely, very vaguely remember. It's like having a potent little time capsule explode in your face. For the fella tinkering in his garage, it must be even more pronounced because he's older than me and spends his whole day listening to it. He must live a large part of his life being reminded of feelings and emotions that are decades old. Because what's being released in the brain is not just his or our personal associations with the time period, but also the political and cultural associations as well. Nostalgia isn't just triggered by audio or visual signals, but also scent. You walk along the street and the smell of a certain paint or rubber can transport you back to being an infant in school. For some reason, freshly laid tarmac takes me back to being a boy, and is usually the case, long, warm summer days. But the difference now is that the past and its mix of melancholy and comfort is on tap and just a button or a mouse click away. For me, that little souvenir from a terrible year would take me back to the 90s, and the years weren't really that terrible. If new romantics and synth is the 80s, then Britpop, indie and grunge are our 90s nostalgia. But something else also happened in the 90s, which takes us slightly off the beaten path into more interesting places. And what I'm talking about is the ambient scene. Helped along with copious amounts of ecstasy, mushrooms and acid, the 90s ambient scene is interestingly cultural niche, because you can see clearly that it had transhuman and transcendental element baked right into the heart of it. The orb's little fluffy clouds seemed to be fixated on mixing electronic music more advanced than we'd heard before, with the idealising of an average sunny day. The individual would see the world and the universe and even other dimensions new again. But my personal favourite of this genre was the Future Sound of London and their epic Life Forms album. What's so fascinating about it is that they weren't messing about. You can call it pretentious even, But the fact is, they were deadly serious in their aim to transcend the bounds of space and time and present an entirely new experience, sometimes awe-inspiring and sometimes horrifying. The video complemented it perfectly, pushing the CGI of its time to its absolute limits, and it was limited. We'd travel across dimensions and time. We'd fly through the primordial ooze and fall into black holes. We'd visit distant moons and unknown space and swim in their oceans with weird creatures. A 90-minute concept album which had as its main motif the beeping sounds of a satellite traversing an interstellar, interdimensional soundscape. Sometimes the motifs would be high energy, sometimes low as of struggling, sometimes intense. The human consciousness unbound from the material realm, wandering time and space, and the serious and downright weird and scary music drove it all. This was the future happening, literally the future sound of London. I listened to it recently and I got a deep sense of nostalgia from it. Nostalgia for visions of the future. But Future Sound of London is, I'll admit, an obscure detour to make a wider point. A much more common vision of the future we see online today is, of course, synthwave. Synthwave and the VHS aesthetic and blocky digital graphics which come along with it was the dissident response to the nihilism of post-modernity. But the problem with that, and the reason I never found it very interesting, is that it's essentially just another form of nostalgia dusted off and wheeled out in a world which is itself completely awash in nostalgia, a world in which the past never really seems to die, and the present which cannot express itself in any meaningful sense. The postmodern philosopher Jacques Derrida, definitely no friend of ours, coined a term for this which caught on among leftist intellectuals to some degree, who've studied and discussed the subject far more than the right. Derrida called it hauntology. The present was haunted by ideas and forms which should have died and drifted off into the ether. And yet, what they expressed had never happened either. The Future Sound of London is now a ghostly vision of a future which never came to pass, belonging to a cultural moment in the 90s that died, and yet life forms still exists. It's just a mouse click away. Viewed from this perspective, synthwave is more of a zombie, a piece of nostalgia given a new piece of life. The question then becomes, just how haunted are we in the here and now? My recent stream with Endeavour on our classic movies series, we discussed the 2004 Pixar animation, The Incredibles. The Incredibles does not have a 21st century look or feel. Its aesthetic is retro-futurist. It looks like how people in the 50s or early 60s imagined America would be in the future. It's idealist and optimistic. The streets are clean. The population is overwhelmingly white, and they have nice transportation systems like monorails. And this too never happened. Retrofuturism is like a ghost from a future that never happened. In actual fact, almost all pop culture now is a reference or a copy or a pastiche of something which came before it. Nothing seems new or original. We're drowning in the past, in nostalgia for things that could have been. Cultural movements built on nostalgia are not new either. The Romantic era of the 19th century was nostalgic. Poets, writers, and especially painters tried to reimagine a Europe that had not gone through the Industrial Revolution or the Enlightenment. The land was still pure and magical, untouched by oil and grim mass production, by rationalism. But the difference between then and now is that it isn't one particular cultural movement which haunts us. It's the past in general, the past as a whole. The past just refuses to lay down and die. It can't. And so the present and the past become merged into one mass of forms. My YouTube suggestions, for example, will feature Pink Floyd, Wagner and New Order all being suggested alongside each other. Leftist intellectuals from Adorno to Mark Fisher have understood this problem and put the blame down to capitalism more recently neoliberalism, the problem of the past and the future all crunching up into one incoherent mess. In 2009, a backlash against X Factor destroying the music industry, that the public tried to get their own song to Christmas number one to displace the Simon Cowell shill grift operation. The song they chose was Rage Against the Machine. Rebellion Against the Machine will also be outsourced back to the 90s, it seems. Lana Del Rey is certainly of the post-2000 era, yet once again, a brief browse of her Wikipedia page says Del Rey herself has noted a persistent theme of 1950s and 1960s Americana. The strong elements of American nostalgia brought Idolater to classify her firmly as alternative pop. Del Rey elaborated on her connection to the past in an interview with Artists Direct, saying, "I wasn't even born in the 50s, but I feel like I was there." we all feel like we were there. Lana Del Rey also perfected the home movie aesthetic, which reminds you of 80s and 90s cozy family home videos. In fact, we see that style more now than we did then. The tinkerer in the garage has access to any era of music he feels like reminiscent to because he's willing to listen to the ads that pop up between songs. I actually think the problem is more fundamental than just an economic one, and when followed through reveals something much more troublesome for progressives. The problem is technology. Technology is essentially freezing cultural forms and preventing them from disappearing. The advent of the internet means everyone has instant access to all previous cultural trends, and so the cultural landscape becomes overwhelmed and saturated by these ghosts of the past, to such a degree that the present can't actually emerge and express itself in a distinctive way. And history ended around 20 years ago. The exact same time we saw the emergence of pastiche and references to references to references in the likes of the Pixar animation and pop music. But even outside of pop culture, the problem can be seen. This video was picked up on eBay, then uploaded to YouTube and monetized. Who this family is or was is entirely unknown. Yet through technology, we get to see them having Christmas dinner in 1988. And I have to admit, it's pretty bloody creepy. They're literally ghosts. Just like Dexy's Midnight Runners, the future sound of London, of retro-futurism, this family Christmas dinner of 1988 stalks the present along with a billion other images and forms. The present is being crushed by the past. It's a curious thing to watch left-wing YouTube today because it seems every second video cites Mark Fisher, but they never address the real problem facing a cultural philosophy which is progressive and forward-thinking, that things will always get better. They never address Fisher's point that, in truth, the left lost the future to, as he would have it, neoliberalism, or as we would say today, woke capitalism. We've never been further away from some sort of socialist idealism, and just because BLM run riot in the streets or Captain Marvel is a woman doesn't mean we're getting any closer to it. And it gets worse again, because to begin railing against the present sees them fall into the dreaded, for them, horror of all horrors, the mode of a reactionary or a conservative. All those utopian visions of working class revolts resulting in socialism breaking apart global capital and sharing out the loot are, once again, just ghosts haunting our present. Their present more than mine. Another vision of a potential future which never happened. And unlike the right, thinking leftists can't even allow themselves to engage in nostalgia because the future was always supposed to be better than the past. The question currently facing the right, and a possible way out of the maze, is whether or not we should have been looking for meaning in these sort of mainstream societal structures to begin with. In a famous Red Letter Media sketch, Mike asked Jay the question, "Are you happy you lived long enough to see all your childhood heroes trashed and destroyed?" The same applies to Europeans more generally. At the beginning of the end of the history, 2000, Tom Wolfe published a great novel called A Man in Full, which I've read about 5 times. The blurb on the back of the book said, This book will be a good friend to you. Wolfe's book features 2 white men at opposite ends of the social spectrum, one a larger-than-life real estate tycoon who's bankrupt called Charlie Crocker, and the other working class and wrongfully jailed. The question posed by Wolfe in the book is what do men do when whatever choices they make result in bad outcomes? And his answer becomes pivotal to the book. It's stoicism. Stoicism allows men to liberate themselves by focusing on their actual lived lives and not worrying about narratives and social constructs. And if we're honest about it, most of us are already in that state of mind. But to be consciously so is something else. From his perspective, the cultural malaise is itself a passing phase, and its ghosts, and increasingly actual demons, are contingent on that state of being. The phase of deconstruction and fluid identities and commodification of everything is something to be endured but not embraced. It isn't that we do not understand the moral codes of the day, we do. It's just that we reject them, all of them, out of hand and are simply waiting for the era to pass, rather than yearning for the past. In the end, it's the acknowledgement that post-modernity has become stale and it's really beginning to stink. And it too will eventually become just another ghost of the past. State of mind is everything. How do we conceptualise the present and the dissident right? What even is the dissident right? Nostalgia as a force sets in when a thing has become, when its maturity is reached and begins to dwell on the past, on times gone by. Essentially, this is why so many leftist intellectuals fell into a deep melancholia. A worldview built on a positive vision of the future stagnated and was absorbed into capitalism, its archenemy, and became nothing but a woke tumour waving a crass flag. At the beginning of this year, after the Trump debacle, I made a video called The Long Road to a New Story. The road we need is the road to becoming, but it'll begin first with stoicism, endurance, and letting go. Thanks for listening, folks. I'll catch you later.